All right. Well, hey, welcome. Welcome to Cornerstone, and definitely welcome back, Ed and Joyce. It's great to have, not that I don't enjoy leading worship, but it's great to have someone else doing it and helping to lead us. How you doing? How you doing this week? How was your week? Stressful, enjoyable, great, crazy. We all had different weeks. My dad is away. A lot of you know he's in Nepal right now. Quick picture. That's it. He's actually in Nepal, and this is Nate, the missionary that connected him up. And so he's starting this week long of training and very major culture adjustment. I'm telling you, life is going to be very different for him this week. So he's got a different week ahead for him. But he appreciates all of our prayers and looking forward to seeing what happens. My week, I've been getting to help out at Oasis more often recently. With him away, I'm kind of filling in. And the more I fill in, the more I kind of want to keep coming back. So I'm really getting connected to these kids, which is a really good thing. So I've enjoyed that. If you have a phone with you, get it out right now. And I'm not going to ask you to turn it off. I want you to text me. So I'm gonna put something up on the screen in a second. I just want you to text me one word. I promise I'm not going to use it against you. I'm not going to share it with anyone else. Just text me the word that most accurately describes the pace of your life this week. The pace of your life. Hectic, slow, just about right. Just one of those three, whichever most closely describes the pace of your life this week. Just text that to me. And I put my phone on. Do not bother me. I'm going to get that back out. All right. Text messages coming in. Let's see what we got. I'm not going to give any names. I got a hectic. I got a just about right. A just about right. Two just about. Three just about rights. Another hectic. Another hectic. Another hectic. An insane up. Cheater. Cheater. Hectic. I got a sticker. Oh, boy. I got to look at this one. Cray, cray. Way too busy. Too much homework. Just about right. Nobody gave me a slow. Come on now. Just about right. I almost gave a name because it said the name here. Whew. So, oh, there's a slow. We got a slow. We got one slow. Depends on the day. We're talking about the week, right? Come on, guys. Come on. Some of you just can't follow rules, can you? All right. Okay. So that gives us an idea. Sounds like we're pretty busy. There's a lot of hectics and some extrapolations of hecticity. All right, one more word, one more text. Answer this statement truthfully. Oh, insanely hectic. Another one came in. Truthfully, I typically set aside a 24-hour day for rest every week. Yes, no, I have no idea what you're talking about. I typically set aside a 24-hour day for rest every week, typically. Nope, no, 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 no. What is that? What's rest? No, 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 no. Okay, no. Yes, I got a yes. I got an I have no idea what you're talking about. No. Oh, great. We've got another language here. Okay, Rick, this is on you. I have no idea what you're talking about. Is that what it is? Okay, I just interpreted. I got a 24 hours. I can barely set aside 4 hours. Another sticker. I'm going to embarrass you if you keep doing this to me. No idea what you're talking about. LOL, what? All right. Okay, well, that gives me an idea of where we're at. Thank you for texting me, all of you who brought your phone and had it on today. Interesting, interesting. Do you take time for rest? Before we jump into Exodus this morning, I found an article that I thought was pretty interesting. I'm going to read a chunk of it to you. It's from this site called becomingaminimalist.com. Just found it out from a random search. It's called The Lost Practice of Resting One Day Each Week. Just a little bit of this article. Not necessarily a Christian site. It's just a site that I found. He that can take rest is greater than he that can take cities. Benjamin Franklin. Ask any physician, they'll tell you rest is essential for physical health. When the body's deprived of sleep, it's unable to rebuild and recharge itself adequately. Your body requires rest. Ask any athlete, They'll tell you rest is essential for physical training. Rest is needed for muscles to repair themselves and prevent injury. This is true whether you run marathons, pitch baseballs, or climb rocks. Your muscles require rest. Ask many of yesterday's philosophers, and they will tell you rest is essential for the mind. Leonardo da Vinci said, "Every now and then, go away. Have a little relaxation, for when you come back to your work, your judgment will be surer." And Ovid, the Roman poet, said, "Take rest. A field that is rested gives a bountiful crop. Your mind requires rest." Ask most religious leaders, and they will tell you rest is essential for the soul. Buddhism, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, Baha'i, and even Wiccan, among others, teach the importance of setting aside a personal time of rest. Your soul requires rest. Ask many corporate leaders, they'll tell you that rest is essential for productivity. Forbes magazine recently wrote, "You can only work so hard and do so much in a day. Everybody needs to rest and recharge. Your productivity requires rest." Physicians, athletes, philosophers, poets, religious leaders, and corporate leaders all tell us the same thing. Take time to rest. It's absolutely essential for a balanced, healthy life. Yet when you ask people, when I ask people, in today's frenzied culture, if they intentionally set aside time for rest, most will tell you they're too busy. Even fewer would say they set aside any concentrated time, 12 to 24 hours, for rest. There are just too many things to get done, too many demands, too many responsibilities, too many bills, and too much urgency. Nobody can afford to waste time resting in today's results-oriented world. Is rest a waste of time? Absolutely not. Why are we so busy? Why are anxiety and depression the norm and not the exception? Why is it so hard to find time to rest? We could name a lot of different reasons. We could list off all these different reasons. Maybe family upbringing. Nobody ever taught you to rest. An unhealthy priority on money. I need more. Unreasonable employer expectations. There are serious pressures at our jobs. Decreased loyalty between employers and employees, debt accumulation, value of production over relationships, all these different forces, lots of forces are pushing us towards busyness and away from rest. Most of us get swept up. We get caught up in the tide, and only a few of us escape that. We feel guilty when we rest. That's not how it should be. But I want to suggest to you today that there is one underlying force keeping Christians busier than is healthy. And that force, you'll have to decide if you believe this or not, that force is unbelief. Unbelief is the force that keeps us busier than we're supposed to be. So what am I talking about? Let me back up a little bit. I'm going to back up and then dive in. So my theology is what I believe about God, okay? Just bear with me for a second. My theology is what I believe about God. We have two different theologies at work. Two different theologies. First is intellectual theology. That's what I think I believe. That's what I'm going to tell you I believe. It's what I really think I believe. But I have a second theology going on. That's practical theology. That's what I really believe. That's what I practice. That's my practical theology. It's what I do, how I live. And sometimes those two theologies do not match. So let me connect that with what we're talking about today. Most of us would say, if we are Christians, if we're followers of Jesus, we'd say, I believe that God is my provider. That is intellectual theology. I believe God is my provider. I'm going to suggest if you answered hectic or no to the two questions that were texted, or some variation of those, there's a good chance your practical theology is not the same. There's a good chance you do not actually believe God is your provider. Because a hectic pace and unwillingness to rest betrays a different practical theology that states something different. And when we forget that God's our provider, unless we're disgustingly wealthy, there will hardly ever be a time when it feels like it's okay to rest. Because work doesn't ever go away. Work does not ever go away. So I want to suggest, as we get into Exodus, that our overbusyness may actually be a problem of unbelief. And maybe you're going to have to wrestle with that. Maybe you don't agree with that yet, but have you ever considered that? That that might actually be true. This morning we're going back to the time when God introduced to the nation of Israel the Sabbath day. Sabbath day. That's what we're going back to. Exodus chapter 16. Open your Bible. And I'm also going to mention, if how many of you have the YouVersion app on your phone? YouVersion app. Shannon has just opened up this opportunity on your YouVersion. If you open it up and click the far right bottom corner, more things, there's an events button. And Cornerstone notes will be up there. You can track with your phone if you have the YouVersion. Don't spend all of your morning downloading and doing that, but that's probably going to be going on a regular basis. You can pull it up on YouVersion and follow along that way. You can take notes and do all that. So Shannon's helping us to catch up with the 90s, and we're moving forward here. So thank you, Shannon. Excellent. So that some of you are going to like that tool, some of you will not. So Exodus chapter 16. Israel is in the desert, right? They're going to be there for a while. Think about, they're in the desert. There's not a whole lot to do. I mean, they're traveling a little bit, but there's not much to do. And yet God is going to forcefully, right here in this passage, he's going to press these people into a mandatory rhythm of 6 work days and 1 rest day. That's what's going to happen in this chapter. It is that important to God. Rest is not an option. It's a mandate. He makes it non-negotiable. And they can't even disobey this one, the way it plays out. And you'll see in a minute. So the life lesson, every one of these 10 weeks, there's a life lesson. Here it is, going to put it out front. God never fails to provide. Don't give in to doubt. God never fails to provide. Don't give in to doubt. They're going to fail here. You're going to see how. Exodus 16, the episode breaks into 2 parts. I'm going to just kind of break it out for you here first. First, Israel's in need. They've got a problem. They've got a deep need. That's the first few verses. The last part of the verse, the chapter, big chunk of the chapter, is going to show, how's God going to meet that need? What's he going to do? And I think what we find when God provides for us, often he doesn't just provide that surface need, that initial thing that we think we need, but he provides more, something deeper, something better, something more profound. And so I think we're going to see that here. So let's dig in. Chapter 16 of the book of Exodus, Israel is in need. What's going on? Verse 1, the whole Israelite community set out from Elim and came to the desert of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after they'd come out of Egypt. Okay, so how long have they been out of Egypt? The 15th day of the second month. How many weeks is that? 6 weeks. Right? So about 6 weeks has passed. Verse 2, in the desert, the whole community grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The Israelites said to them, if only we had died by the Lord's hand in Egypt. There we sat around pots of meat and ate all the food we wanted. But you have brought us out into this desert to starve this entire assembly to death. Okay. There's some strong words there. The Israelite people are in need. They have some serious needs. A couple serious needs they have. They need food and they need faith. They're lacking in both in these first couple of verses. They need food, they need faith. Israel is only 6 weeks away from crossing the Red Sea. That's all it's been. They've traveled a ways. They've moved. There's some markers here in where they are, so I'll throw the map up for you so you can see. They started up here in the land of Goshen, and roughly, there's some debate about where exactly these places are, but our best understanding, they're about here at this Red X. So they've traveled between 200 and 250 miles on foot, with their children, with all their animals. They don't have trucks to drive. They're walking 200. Okay, so this is where they're at. This huge caravan, 2 million people. When was the last time you tried to lead 2 million people to walk 1 mile? 200 miles, 250 miles. Everything they own, they are tired. Their feet hurt. Their kids are not having fun anymore. It was an adventure. Let me ride the sheep for a while. No, they are not having fun. The supplies are getting thin. Everybody's losing weight. They're getting baked in the sun. Think about their situation. It's getting pretty bad. 6 weeks, okay? Their rations are running down. It's bad enough that their memories of life back in Egypt are starting to get a little distorted. Did you notice that? They imagine themselves sitting around the all-you-can-eat buffet after a pleasant day at work. Is that what it was like? I don't think so. But it's bad enough that anything is better than where they are right now. They're starting to feel desperate. So the spirit of grumbling begins to grow out of these people. And eventually the spirit envelops the whole group. They approach Moses and Aaron with their complaint. And listen to the words, verse 3. If only we had died by the Lord's hand in Egypt. We wish we never left. Because there we sat around pots of meat, ate all the food we wanted. But you have brought us into this desert to starve this entire assembly to death. Man, oh man, what's wrong with this picture? Can you see anything right with this picture? I don't see anything right with this picture. This is wrong. Their memory is seriously skewed. They were slaves. They did not eat at the king's table. Their slave masters wouldn't even give them rations to make what they were supposed to make. It was not a pretty picture in Egypt. But anything would be better than where they are right now. So they bring their complaint. They're grumbling to Moses. Last week, you remember what grumbling means? This isn't just a simple complaint. Like, we just like to register this respectful complaint with the authorities. No, this is a vote of no confidence. Moses, we don't buy what you're doing. We don't want to follow you anymore. And your God, we're not with him. That's what they're saying here. You brought us out here to starve us to death. There's some serious force in their accusation. Now, I don't doubt that they're hungry. They are hungry. God didn't give them a buffet feast every night in the wilderness. There were no camel stops so they could grab a cold shower or a hot shower and take and a bite to eat. They couldn't do that. They're in the wilderness. And God has them in the wilderness to test them. And just as he led them to bitter water, last week, right? He led them to bitter water on purpose. Now he lets them get hungry. They're hungry. It's legitimate. And he's doing it to test their faith. And once again, they fail. They give in to doubt. They've seen God's faithfulness multiple times, and yet they doubt again. We understand that, right? We do that. But is God's plan to let them die in the desert? Is that God's purpose and plan? Here's what I'm going to do. These people I love, I'm going to release them from slavery, take them out to the desert and have a windstorm. Just pile the sand over top of their corpses. That'll bring glory to me. I love my people. That's what they're thinking. God's plan is to take them to the promised land, right? That's his plan. If you don't know the story, this is a spoiler warning. Close your ears if you want for a second. But I'm going to tell you, most of these people are going to die in the desert. But it's not because God failed to provide. The reason they're going to die is because even though God provided and proved his faithfulness over and over, they continue to give into doubt. Say, no, we don't believe you. We don't care what you already did. They refused to believe God would take care of them. They gave into doubt over and over and over. So, first three verses, that's their situation. It's not pretty. No question about it. Israel's definitely in need. Definitely in need. They need food. They need faith. Rest of the chapter, we're going to see what's God going to do about it. And I won't go into detail about what I would do if I was the God of these people, but what's God going to do with it? God is going to provide. How's God going to provide? What's he going to do? In spite of their unbelief, what is God going to do? Let's look. Verse 4. Then the Lord said to Moses, I will rain down bread from heaven for you. So undeserved. The people are to go out each day and gather enough for that day. In this way, I will test them and see whether they'll follow my instructions. On the sixth day, they are to prepare what they bring in, and that is to be twice as much as they gather on the other days. So Moses and Aaron said to all the Israelites, in the evening you will know that it was the Lord who brought you out of Egypt. In the morning you'll see the glory of the Lord because he has heard your grumbling against him. Who are we that you should grumble against us? Moses also said, "You will know that it was the Lord when he gives you meat to eat in the evening and all the bread you want in the morning, because he who has heard your grumbling, because he has heard your grumbling against him. Who are we? You're not grumbling against us, but against the Lord." And then Moses told Aaron, "Say to the entire Israelite community, come before the Lord, for he has heard your grumbling." I might be gulping at that point. While Aaron was speaking to the whole Israelite community, they looked toward the desert, and there was the glory of the Lord appearing in the cloud. He's faithful. He's still there. The Lord said to Moses, "I've heard the grumbling of the Israelites. Tell them at twilight you will eat meat. In the morning you'll be filled with bread. Then you'll know that I am the Lord your God. And you'll never forget again." Right? Not right. Verse 13, "That evening, quail came and covered the camp. In the morning, there's a layer of dew around the camp. When the dew was gone, thin flakes like frost on the ground appeared on the desert floor. When the Israelites saw it, they said to each other, 'What is it?'" Manna. That's the word. Manna. What is it? For they did not know what it was. Moses said to them, "It is the bread the Lord has given you to eat. This is what the Lord has commanded. Each one is to gather as much as he needs. Take an omer," that's about 2 quarts, "for each person you have in your tent." Israelites did as they were told. Some gathered much, some gathered little. When they measured it by the omer, he who gathered much did not have too much. He who gathered little did not have too little. Each one gathered as much as he needed. Then Moses said to them, "No one is to keep any of it until morning." All right, that's pretty awesome, right? Their bellies are churning. They are super hungry. They wake up in the morning and there's just these flakes and they can eat them. Quail shows up at night. It just shows up. And there's all these birds that they get to eat. Just incredible how God provided. They wanted meat and bread. They got it. All they can eat. This is better than back in Egypt, I promise you. But notice verse 4. This is a test. "I will test them. And will they follow God's instructions?" What are God's instructions? It's not too complicated. He said, "Gather only as much as you need. You don't keep any of it till the next day. Just, I'm going to provide for you today, and then I'm going to provide for you tomorrow. Keep what I give you, eat what I give you day by day." No hoarding. You can't even save a little bit for tomorrow. You can't save any for tomorrow. "Tomorrow I'm going to do it again. Trust me." This entire series is about 10 times Israel tested God with their unbelief. You see it over and over again. But we're also seeing it's not just Israel testing God. God is testing Israel. Are they going to trust him? Are they going to follow him? The answer is, unfortunately, not. Not everyone. Some will. Some will not. Verse 20. "However, some of them paid no attention to Moses. They kept part of it until morning, but it was full of maggots and began to smell. So Moses was angry with them." That's gross. But I want you to notice as we unpack this event, there are two groups of people experiencing this test. There are those who believe God and follow his instructions, and pretty much everything goes fine for them. And then there's this other group who said, "I don't believe. I'm not going to follow his instructions." And things fall apart for them. These are the ones who learned the hard way, right? So there are believers and there are unbelievers in this scenario. Unbelievers, they figure, "We better keep some of this. What is it for tomorrow? Because we don't know if it's going to show up tomorrow. We've never seen it before in our lives. We're hungry. We were hungry before. So we better keep some." And what happened to them? Next morning, their whole tent reeks. They follow their nose and it's their manna bag. It's slimy and it's got maggots in it. It's gross. Lesson learned, right? Lesson learned, maybe. Verse 21. "Each morning everyone gathered as much as he needed. When the sun grew hot, it melted away. On the sixth day, they gathered twice as much. 2 omers for each person, and the leaders of the community came and reported this to Moses. He said to them, 'This is what the Lord commanded. Tomorrow is to be a day of rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. So bake what you want to bake and boil what you want to boil, save whatever is left, and keep it until morning.'" All right, so part one of the test is just take what you need for today. Don't keep any left. And then day two is the same thing. Day three is the same thing. Day four is the same thing. Day five is the same thing. Day six, it changes. Today, you need to collect double. Today you collect double, tomorrow there won't be any. So here's the second part of the test. And this is the spot where we see the nation of Israel given the gift of rest. I'm going to give you this day. This is a day you don't have to collect anything. Catch up on the day before, and then this day is a day of rest. It's a day for me, for you. It's a day for not working like you have been. And you got to remember, they were slaves for 400 years. Do you think they had some nice days off and vacation time in Egypt? No. Slave masters don't understand this principle of rest. They want productivity. They want work, and you're going to keep working. It was pretty brutal, especially at the end. So this is not familiar for them at all. This is through this event, through this scenario, the situation God placed them in, he's giving them this gift of Sabbath, this gift of rest. Here's where it starts. But again, some of them are not so sure. Like, I don't know, that's not how it worked the first 5 days. Like, how do I know it's going to show up tomorrow? I kind of like to eat every day. So again, we got two groups of people. Some believe, some don't. And those people probably already learned their lesson. We tried keeping some over, and it got our manna bag all messed up. We don't have a lot of water to wash these things out, so I'm not gonna do that again. I'm not gonna risk the maggots. And so we have probably the same group of people that ignored the second time. So verse 24, they saved it till morning, as Moses commanded. Some of them obeyed. A lot of them did the right thing. Didn't stink or get maggots in it. Eat it today, Moses said, because today is a Sabbath to the Lord. You'll not find any of it on the ground today. 6 days you gather it, but on the seventh day, the Sabbath, there won't be any. Nevertheless, some of the people went out on the seventh day to gather it, but they found none. Then the Lord said to Moses, how long will you refuse to keep my commands, my instructions? Bear in mind that the Lord has given you the Sabbath. That's why on the sixth day, he gives you bread for 2 days. Everyone's to stay where he is on the seventh day. No one is to go out. So the people rested on the seventh day. So some of these people, they thought they had the system figured out. Every day you collect some. Didn't work that way on the seventh day. And they had nothing to eat. So this group that does not believe, does not follow God's instructions, they learn the hard way. It's not about figuring out how it's going to work. It's about following God. This is not a scientifically proven. This is exactly what the manna was. You know, I found something online that said they think that maybe it was an insect excretion that tasted sweet and they could gather this and eat it and stuff. But there's no way that could work. The way this miracle played out, 6 days it's there, 1 day it's not, 40 years long this happened. You'd have to have a plague of bugs like up to your elbows constantly excreting if you want, and that's just gross. So this is a miracle, right? This is a miracle. God did this. He gave it to him 6 days a week. He took it away on the seventh, and this is a pattern. God is saying, I want you guys to rest. You're going to work, you're going to rest. You're going to work, you're going to rest. After the first week, pretty much everybody figured out how this is going to work, and they complied. And so there was no option. They learned the hard way on the first week. The rest of it, they didn't have any choice. So they started this weekly rhythm. 6 days of work, 1 day of rest. 6 days of work, 1 day of rest. It's not a command yet. Not really. The Ten Commandments are coming in like three chapters. It's right down the road. But God starts it here. He starts it with this, which I didn't really fully realize until I'm like going through this and digging into it. So let's finish the chapter, verse 31. The people of Israel called the bread manna. What is it? It was white like coriander seed, tasted like wafers made with honey. Moses said, this is what the Lord commanded. Take an omer of manna and keep it for the generations to come. We're going to remember this, guys. We're going to put this aside. We're going to remember this forever. The next generations need to see this so they can see the bread I gave you to eat in the desert when I brought you out of Egypt. So Moses said to Aaron, take a jar, put an omer of manna in it, and then place it before the Lord to be kept for the generations to come. As the Lord commanded Moses, Aaron put the manna in front of the testimony. This is the Ark of the Covenant representing the presence of God. Put it there, put it in there, that it might be kept, preserved. The Israelites ate manna 40 years till they came to a land that was settled. They ate manna until they reached the border of Canaan. And you can read later in Scripture where it says, and the manna stopped. God provided a new way. They entered the promised land and the manna was no more. They never saw it again. This is how God provided food for 2 million Israelites in the desert for 40 years. Manna. And so God is providing, but he's not just giving them food. He's giving them more than that. So this is the second section that God provides. How does he provide? He does provide food, for sure. He feeds them for 40 years, miraculously. But he also provides faith. This is an opportunity to grow in faith. This is clearly not an accident. This is not just, it's just some random thing that happened. Aren't we lucky? 6 days on, one day off, consistently for 40 years? I don't think so. They're growing in their faith through this. And he's also providing them rest. He's also giving them, this is going to be a pattern for you. This is what I want for you. Week after week, they get this reinforcement. I'm providing for you. I'm providing for you week after week after week. And maybe along the way, someone decided, I'm going to try keeping some over until the next day and see what happens. I don't feel like gathering the next day. We don't have any indication of that, but this is how it worked for 40 years. So this is Israel. This is manna. I've never seen manna. I wish I knew where the Ark of the Covenant was, could open that thing up, but I don't think that's a good idea. I watched Raiders of the Lost Ark. Don't want to do that. But what do we do with this? Well, the lesson we've already said, God never fails to provide. We see an example here. How does he care for his people? What does he do? He provides for them deeply, not just the physical needs, but deeper than that. So God never fails to provide. Don't give in to doubt. We're at risk to give in to doubt. All the time. There are so many different things can cause us doubt. Things that wake you up at night. It's doubt. We struggle with doubt. We all do. Like, I'm in the same boat with you. We wrestle with doubt. And we can doubt God in a lot of ways. But as I look at this, and as I look at what's going on, what is God doing with Israel here? Here's where I see that this episode really intersecting with our lives today. When we're looking at that, how busy we are, and you answered with all these text messages to me, how overly busy we are. How do overly busy people doubt God? And I want to suggest to you, and I want you to think about this. I believe we doubt God when we refuse to rest. When we say in our minds or to other people or just in our actions, I cannot stop. I have to keep going. I do not have time to rest. If that's how we're thinking, I believe that's doubting God. Now, we have to get to a place where we can agree on this because we're talking about Israel, right? And Israel and our situation, our scenario is not necessarily always the same. God was very forceful with Israel here, saying you're going to practice Sabbath rest. There's no way around it. There's nothing you can do about it. I'm forcing you into this. You're not even going to have food to gather on these other days. A few chapters later, God gives the Ten Commandments. And the fourth commandment is this principle, this law of Sabbath rest, which he gives a lot of detail to, more instruction than most of the other commandments. I want you to remember the Sabbath day. I want you to rest from your work. Then it becomes a command. It becomes kind of official. Seventh day, set it aside for God, for relationships, for rest. Just stop. You just have to stop sometimes. But that was then. And I could have conversations with a lot of Christians and probably some of you that would say that was for then. And the most prominent argument I get is nowhere in the New Testament are you going to see expressly stated, you must honor the Sabbath day. You're not going to find that expressly stated in the New Testament. So that's a valid thing to think about. But is Sabbath rest still for us? I'm going to suggest that it is. And I don't want to suggest it in a legalistic way because we don't live under that. We don't live under legalism, like you better keep this law or God's going to get you. That's not really how it works. We've been given grace, we've been given Christ, but there's still certain things that are a lot better for us if we do it, if we listen to God. So let me just give you two grounds why I believe Sabbath rest is still for today. Number one, Jesus made rest a priority. Rest was a priority for him. Many times, Jesus often withdrew to lonely places and prayed. Jesus Christ, Son of God, creator of the universe, he often got away. He stopped. He wasn't constantly on the go. He worked hard. He worked a lot, but he pulled back and stopped. I don't see a clear rhythm for that. I don't see a clear, okay, it's the seventh day, guys, so today we take the day off. I don't see that. I don't see that. But there's a second reason where I'm going to say it's still for us. And that reason is that the rationale for the Sabbath goes all the way back to creation. The rationale goes back to creation. And there are multiple places where you see rationale presented in the Bible. And this is kind of a logical explanation here. But when you see it, hearken all the way back to creation. This is how I designed you. It's a good chance that that's still the way it is. There's a good chance that's how we're designed. This is part of our design. That as humans, the article I read earlier, everybody agrees that rest is good for us. Some of us don't get enough, right? Some of us don't get enough. Jesus made rest a priority. The reason goes all the way back to creation. God rested. In Genesis, 6 days, the Lord made the heavens and the earth, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. So he talks about it in Genesis right off the bat. Then he gives more detail later. Did God need to rest on the seventh day? Was God tired? Was he exhausted after all that creating? Is that God? Does he get tired? He didn't do it for himself. That wasn't the point. God is God. The reason he rested was to establish this pattern. This is how it's supposed to work. This is how it work, absolutely. Hard work, good work, valuable work for a good purpose. Work, absolutely. But also, stop. Gotta stop. So God's given us this rhythm of work and rest. This is for our good. This is by our design. This is every human's need. We need to stop. When we don't, anxiety goes up, blood pressure goes up, our health goes down, our joy goes down, our productivity goes down, our satisfaction goes down, meaningful relationships go down. When you don't take time to stop, almost everything drops. And I don't know if I'd be arguing with anybody here about that reality. We agree with this, and yet in America, it's the norm to ignore it and to work ourselves to exhaustion. So we're looking at Israel, but we're looking at ourselves, because the way your text message is communicated to me, we're not here. We're not doing it. This is not a priority. But I think we'd be a lot better off if it was. So I know there are some in their minds thinking it's impossible. I can't. I cannot do it. So I want to challenge you. I guess most of you, because most of you said the way you texted, I'm talking to almost all of us today. If you don't think you have time to follow God's command and design to rest one day a week, you are not functioning as if God is your provider. You're functioning as if you are your provider. That's how Israel was too. But that's not where we need to be. That's a pressure you don't need to take on yourself. And maybe you didn't realize it until now, but that is what we're saying to God if we won't take time to rest. God, you don't understand. I have to work 7 days just to stay afloat. That's how we think. But we're lying to ourselves in a lot of ways. So I want to suggest, if you're struggling with this and aren't having time to take rest, There are some major changes that probably need to happen, and major rethinking needs to be done. But the reality is, if you're having trouble staying afloat, it's possibly because you're not taking time to rest. And some of us are in really difficult situations where we can't see how to make any changes. Some work situations are like, what am I supposed to do? And I don't have clear answers for that. We all need to think this through and try to figure it out. But what God has said and how he's designed us is still the same as creation at the original time, taking time to rest. It's not our culture. This is very countercultural. We agree with it. We believe it's true, but we don't know how. So some of you do take time to rest. Some of you do. And if you do, I just want to encourage you, like, it's good. There's a balance, work and rest, work and rest. If you have that rhythm going on, awesome. Just let this be positive reinforcement, because you're getting a lot of negative reinforcement, a lot of pressure not to do it. If you haven't made this a priority, it's not part of your normal life. I just want to encourage you to do some serious thinking about this. Maybe try it for a month or evaluate, what are some things I need to say no to so that I can actually make this happen? It won't be easy. The way all of you texted me, like, this is not an easy thing to think about, but I promise you, if you can figure out how to make this work, it will be good. You will not regret it. You won't. But for some, this whole idea, I'm guessing some of you, the whole idea, a whole day to rest, like, that just seems weird, strange, and boring. What in the world am I supposed to do? Well, a pastor friend shared with me something that was helpful. It's kind of stuck with me. He gave me 4 R's. 4 R's to remember. So if you're following, tracking in your notes, there's 4 things you can write down. These are things you might want to include on your day of rest. There's nothing legalistic about this list. These are just suggestions how to get the most out of your day. And so just 4 things, not too complicated. 1, read. Just take some time to read. Not reading you have to catch up on for work. Not reading that this is stuff I haven't done, I'm feeling guilty because now I can catch up on it. But reading, whether it's a fiction book that you've been wanting to read, or whether it's spending time in your Bible or something to encourage you or spiritually lift you up, take time to just stop and read. It's good for us. Some of you do it, some of you don't. Recreation, that's doing something fun on your day. Do something fun, something you enjoy. For me, it's getting outside. It's maybe exercise. Go for a bike ride. Go for a hike. Get outside and look at the sky. Just be out there. Athletics, something, you know, recreational fun. I'm not talking about Joanna having a softball tournament. Like, that's work for her. She might not get paid for it, but that's work. Right? So recreation, something fun. 3rd R is relationships. That's what it's for. With God and with people, making time for people. Go on a date with your spouse, time with friends, family time, play games, whatever. Relationships. This is just about stopping and investing in those things that we keep pushing off. The last one almost goes without saying, but rest. Take a nap. Take a nap. It's okay. Just slow down. In order to do it, you're going to have to decide what you're not going to do on your day of rest. So if some of you are thinking, I want to try this, I'm going to give you 4 things to avoid. And again, this is not legalistic. These are just suggestions to make your day better, because you're going to be really tempted. If you open up this day for rest, oh, buddy, there's a barrage of things that are going to want to come in. So we'll start easy. I would like to get legalistic about this one. Don't do work you get paid for. Don't go into work. Don't check your work email. Don't do that. Avoid it if you can, if you possibly can. If you're not an employed person, don't do what you would do, school stuff, you know, the academic stuff, homework. Take a day, even students. This is good for people that are small and people that are big and people that are young and people that are old. This is human. This is a human thing. So I would suggest this applies to kids too. Take a day to stop. 2nd thing, housework. The things you don't get paid for. This is kind of bleeding into the next one, to-do lists. Try to avoid to-do lists. On your day of rest, you're going to want to do this. You got all this stuff that hasn't been done. And Dean and I were talking about this earlier this week. And the way it used to be, it was a lot easier. We would work 5 days, Monday to Friday, right? Then you've got Saturday to get to do stuff done. And Sunday, everything's closed, so you can't do anything anyway. That was a better pattern. That was healthier. We don't live that way, so it's a lot harder to actually rest. Sometimes you have a day off and you think you're resting, but you're ticking off these things, you're catching up on the bills, and that's not refreshing the way God wants to refresh you, which means you need to find another time to do that stuff. This is hard. This is not easy, but it's a high value for me. It has been for a long time. Friday, you know, I'm thinking about this, like Friday is usually my day of rest, and we try to do that. Sometimes things come in and creep in, whatever, but this Friday, I put the phone away. I ignored it. Like, I wasn't even. So you might find me less available on a Friday. You might have to come to my house if you want to catch me, or use the house phone, because I'm not looking at my phone, trying not to look at my phone as much. So not legalistic, but something to avoid: technology. And some of you absolutely freak out with that whole idea. Can't do it. Not happening. I'm surgically attached. So let me just say this. Work is important. We're talking about rest a lot today. Work is very important. God gave us work. He made us to work. He gave us 6 days of work. That's a majority of your life. But the seventh day is important too. And we talk about, you know, am I really believing God as my provider? A majority of the way God provides is through your work. He provides through your work. And so we're made to work. That's a good thing. But we're also made to recharge with a time to stop. And it's unhealthy when we go week after week and we just don't stop. So work is good. I love my work. I hope you love your work. We don't always, and there's stress involved in our work. But I'm going to, let me just remind you of this thing. When you know, and maybe you've experienced this, maybe you've not, but when you have stress in your work, and I believe some of you have stress in your work, a couple of you, two or three, when you know there's a day coming up in the near future when you're going to stop and you're going to rest and you're not going to worry about that, you can handle more stress. You can handle that stress. You can handle that work. It makes a world of difference to know there's rest coming up. And when you have 12 days and you know that weekend has come, that helps you. You can handle it because that rest is right around the corner. It's a time to recharge. You're going to plug your power cord in and get spiritually recharged. So that, if you're willing to do that, if you're willing to take that time, that's a sign you're trusting God. I'm going to leave my work alone because I'm trusting God to provide. He wants me to work, but he wants me to rest. So consider where your faith plays into your willingness to rest and stop. Is it a sign of doubt? Is it a sign of unbelief? It might be. Maybe it's not for you, but for a lot of us it is. So turn to the back page of your notes, look at the next steps, and just maybe consider this question. Do I really believe God is my provider? Or has that belief not quite made it into my practical theology? And then, okay, what steps can I take? I want to believe. I want to believe. I want to trust God as my provider. I want to follow him. So what's a step you can take? You got some options, some things to think about. Just take 1 minute. Let's pray. God, help us. Help us, Lord. We want to believe you. We want to follow you. We want to trust you as our provider. But we struggle. We struggle with doubt. We struggle with unbelief just as much as Israel did. And in this one area, it seems like it's pretty prevalent in our country, in our culture, even among us, those in this room. God, we don't take time to rest. Maybe there's some here who never even thought about it, never even realized that this was a priority for you. This is how you designed us. So maybe this is some aha. Maybe this will help me not be as stressed out, not be as anxious, not be as fearful, not be as strung out. God, I pray that we will respond to you with faith and that you will help us. God, you provided manna in the desert for 40 years. And if we want to follow you in this, you will show us how. So, Lord, I pray that you will both give us the want to and give us the how to. Help us to do it. To not be afraid. Forgive us for our doubt. Strengthen our faith. Move us in a healthier direction. In Jesus' name, amen.